Hello and welcome to the Raptors weekly podcast for the week of Monday, August 6th. I'm your host, William Liu. I'm joined by Sirit. Sirit?
How's it going?
It's extremely hot in my apartment. Toronto is extremely muggy.
Me too. Air conditioning, by the way, is something I've realized since moving here. It's just not a thing that you get in apartments. They're just like, no, we're good.
Are you in like the second floor of a house or something?
No, I'm like the 10th floor of a building.
Oh. And why don't you have
air conditioning? I have no idea. Honestly, I think it's like, it's almost like it's a building-wide problem, but the hallways are air conditioned, so half the time I just have my door open, which feels like highly inadvisable, but also just what I'm kind of left with doing at this point, so that's what it's going to be.
True. All right. Beyond weather talk, I guess. Basketball, Raptors.
That is how it goes in August for basketball, just straight to the weather.
What are you talking about? We have breaking news, which is obviously why we did this podcast. The Raptors have signed Greg Monroe. Honestly, do you think Greg Monroe will even play more than 10 minutes a game?
Probably not. Maybe in the regular season, just for the sake of keeping players well rested. There is a front court depth issue, or there was before he was signed, and I can see how on certain nights he might just run with him and, you know, not necessarily put too much strain on anybody else. But as far as is he worth more than 10 minutes? Probably not. And, you know, in fairness, he's getting paid accordingly to that. He's got the $2.2 million vet minimum, I believe. So, I mean, it's a signing that happened on August 6th, you know?
Yeah. I feel like some people might be optimistic just because they've seen that he's, like, scored more than 10 points a game for 7 seasons, which is, I guess, impressive. And I guess he is a pretty skilled offensive player, I would say. But, yeah, I mean, I don't... The thing is, like, the Raptors obviously needed one more big. It was just a choice between, like, do they get, like, an athletic kind of shot-blocking big, and I think they were linked to, like, Christian Wood or whatever, or another big that scores, and I guess they ultimately picked another big that scores. It kind of seems like, at least if maybe I'm reading too deeply into this, but it seems like Nick Nurse has a specific affinity for bigs, and Monroe is a lot like JV, who Nick Nurse is also apparently a huge fan of.
Yeah, I think Nick sees that there's a lot of utility in bigs who are skilled offensively, who play the five, and you know, think add a new dynamic, and especially guys who can pass like Greg Monroe can. It's probably, in my opinion, I think in this offense and just largely in the frame of an NBA team in 2018, that's probably his biggest asset. And I think, you know, that'll definitely open things up for when he does play. And at the same time, like the bench, as much as it developed an identity with its defense and its rim running last year, could get stagnant offensively in the half court. I think that's definitely something that we saw later on. Yeah. And I think Monroe could just be like a nice sort of opposite look on the bench for the night when, let's say, Siakam is just like doing too many transition behind the back spin moves and like, you know, he goes one way and the ball goes the other way. So, I can't necessarily. Yeah, I think I would have probably liked to see Bebe back. And I'm not even a big fan of him, but just because he's an alternative look in terms of what the rest of the rotation looks like, especially in comparison to JV. But I'm not particularly. I don't feel any which way about this. It's not the best move I think they could have made. I think, with the way that the NBA is going right now, Monroe wasn't really a guy that was very playable, especially in the playoffs. So maybe you want somebody who can move their feet and do those kinds of things and like give you a little bit more switchability, which is something that's going to be really big for the Raptors this year. But yeah, it's fine. Like, yeah, Greg adds some things that I think the Raptors are kind of missing. So
yeah. Yeah, I mean, the playoff thing, that's a really good point, because like he played like less than 10 minutes a game, wasn't in every single game for Boston, despite the fact that they had some injuries, and like, I mean, his net rating was minus 12, so it was like he would play 10 minutes, and it wouldn't even be good 10 minutes, and like his individual stats always look fine, but he's just not that good. And I think like some Raptors fans might have an inflated value of what Monroe might bring just because of that Bucks series. He kind of like gave the business to Serge Ibaka for like two or three games before the Raptors solve it. But like, yeah, I mean, Monroe is, I mean, would you prefer Bebe over Monroe?
I think so. Just because, you know, his passing is definitely something that he adds, but Bebe is also a good passer. And then if you think of it in that sort of vacuum, then there isn't really much that Monroe gives that they couldn't have gotten from elsewhere. He's pretty redundant with JV skill set, and I always like to have the alternate skill set sort of thing that I was talking about a little bit earlier. But that said, if he's just going to be a guy that plays with a bench, I think it's fine because he does provide that for the second unit.
Yeah, for sure. This isn't like a, you know, Raptors sign Jared Sollinger and then actually need him to play minutes scenario.
Yeah, no. Yeah, that's the thing, right? Like, if he gets hurt and, like, hurt before training camp, it's not a big deal. Like, I don't think it matters that much. I will add, though, like, just because of the loss of Yak, it probably would have been nice to have somebody who had a higher defensive acumen.
Yeah, or in Monroe's case, like, actually care to play defense, because he just doesn't.
He doesn't care. Yeah.
Like, it's crazy.
And, I mean, if you can't care with Brad Stevens and that Celtics team where all of your young players, like, who are essentially your peers, are giving that much of a crap on defense, and you still won't. I just don't think it's something that you're gonna ever do.
Yeah, that's true. All right, that's honestly as much that really needs to be said about Greg Monroe.
I think we'd probably just keep repeating the same things over and over again if we kept talking about them, to be honest.
Yeah, it's a collective shoulder shrug. All right, let's talk about the disrespect then from ESPN. No, I'm kidding. ESPN actually put out their you know, win projection totals from Kevin Pelton. They're insider, but I think they've been screen capped, which is very unfortunate that happens, but, you know, the game's the game. Anyway, so the Raptors actually were not disrespected this time. You know, like last year, for example, I think someone came out with like 43 wins for the Raptors, and obviously they won 59, and it was like this huge thing, and the Raptors consistently overachieve the ESPN win projection. This year, ESPN has them for 55.1 wins, which is first in the Eastern Conference, even ahead of the Boston Celtics. What do you think caused this change? And also, do you think this is accurate?
What do I think caused this change? Was there perhaps a move that the Raptors made that potentially got a lot of attention and gave them a top five player? I think that might have been the thing that did it. I honestly.
But what about DeMar? Sorry. We'll talk about DeMar. I mean, DeMar was like, one of the big reasons why the Raptors were always like undervalued in this one, because DeMar just wasn't rated well.
I think so too. And you know, it's kind of one of those things where the Raptors did tend to underperform. This is one of those rankings where I think it's kind of like the Raptors will actually end up, if they end up winning 55 games, end up underperforming their talent, but it probably is a little bit more accurate gauge of what their win total will be when you consider the fact that they are integrating a new coach, probably a new offensive system, or at least building on last year's system. I'm assuming there's going to be more creativity, a little bit more counteraction, and that kind of sounds a little bit weird to say after all the reinvention that happened this year, but Nurse is just kind of a guy who really, really gets creative on offense, and that's going to, depending on how far he goes with it, I think it's going to require some buy-in, probably require some time to get all of that buy-in and then to implement the system. Then you're coming off of, you know, you traded your best player or your second best player for a new best player, and that's obviously a huge, huge change. It's going to take time to integrate Kawhi. He's going to be very rusty, you have to assume, for at least probably the first 20 games of the season or so. You're probably, if you get Kawhi at full strength at any point this season, it's probably not until later on. There might be some unrest just given the explosive nature of the trade and DeMar's relationship with Kyle and Kyle's relationship with ever being pissed off by anything. So, you know, it's just kind of going to be interesting. to see how it all falls together. And I think things will eventually fall into line, you know, as much as there might be a little bit of annoyance here and there and like a breaking in period. I think at the end of the day, if Kawhi is probably the biggest question mark, and if he's bought in, then I think everybody else will recognize the fact that this is such a big opportunity that they just kind of have to put everything to the side and try their best to win. But I can't imagine that it won't come without its hiccups. And at the same time, you know, the East is a lot flatter this year. It's kind of, I'm not really sure how to gauge what the win totals are going to look like, but there's more strength in the playoffs. But I think that there's also a whole lot of teams, even more than usual, to be pounded on in that 9 to 16 or 15 range. And you know, I think, you know, consider the fact that the Cavs are probably going to be sneaking into that 7th or 8th seed, like, kind of shows you what the strength of the Eastern Conference is going to look like as far as just, like, beating up on teams and getting that high win total. So I think 55, when you balance all those things, probably fair. I'd probably still hit the over on that, but not by too much. I'd probably put them at about 57 wins for the season. That's kind of where I see them landing. But, 55.5 is totally, totally fair.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're a hater, obviously. Raptors are going to win 65 games this year for sure. Now,
sorry, I apologize.
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, I think...
I meant to say that the Raptors are going to be the greatest regular season team of all time, win 74 games, quite on the verge of re-signing, really, really feeling happy, but then they run into the LeBron-less Cavs the first round and are just actually so spooked by the Quicken Loans Arena and like all the memories from there that they, you know, obviously like to forget about, that they fizzle out in the first round and all hell breaks loose and even more people get fired next season than last.
Yeah, I mean,
that is what I meant to say.
They see Channing Frye, they see Kyle Korver, and it's all over. Yeah, I mean, look, I agree with you. I think the podcast that we did last week was with some more optimistic people, and like I think they listed the reasons why, if everything works out great, the Raptors team could easily win 60 games. Mm-hmm. Just because, like, look, they won 59 last year. They replaced DeMar with a better player, and even Jakob Poeltl as compared to Danny Green. Mm-hmm. I would argue Danny Green's a slight marginal upgrade over next season if we're just comparing, you know, the two players. Obviously, very different positions, but... yeah, I mean, but I think everything you're saying here is also very valid in the sense that, like...
Yeah, I think it's there's just, like... It's unquestionable that they're a more talented team than last year. It's just more so, like, how these things tend to play out in a regular season. I also think, you know, after last season, we understand how empty some of that stuff is anyway, so...
Yeah, I mean, look, like, continuity kind of matters until it doesn't, right? I think that's sort of been, like, a story for the Raptors for a while, but, like,
maybe
at least in the regular
so much
season...
Maybe you continuity that you, like, look around you and it gives you deja vu of how bad you were
before. Yeah. That's part of why you gotta change it up, you know? You can't just roll back the same team and say LeBron's gone. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, continuity, I think it is gonna be a little bit awkward. Like, when you first step into the locker room, like, there's not gonna be... I guess Kyle Lowry can still be that vocal leader, but, I mean, like... Lowry chooses when he wants to do that. He certainly does it a lot, but you know, that's a bit of a issue there. And then, like, obviously, like, DeMar was his, like, stabilizing presence, and like everyone mm-hmm. kind of respected the hierarchy. Now there's a new guy that's supposed to come in and just, you know, mm-hmm. be the king of everything, even though the fact that he doesn't really say anything.
Let's also add, by the way, the fact that Dwayne Casey was a huge stabilizing presence. Right. That's the first NBA coach in Kyle's career that he's had a good, tenable, long-term relationship with. And obviously, they've butted heads. I think we all know that their relationship was far from perfect. But he was a guy that, you know, could kind of get Kyle to get with the program. And, you know, not many coaches have ever really had success with that with Kyle. So that's going to be an interesting thing to watch as well.
I mean, first, actually, I wanted to take a sidebar here. So Kyle Lowry didn't answer any questions at the Las Vegas Team USA thing, and it became this whole thing of like, wow, Kyle Lowry's unhappy, we got to trade him and stuff. Like, you've been in a lot of scrums with Kyle Lowry. Like, can you just explain, like, sort of the attitude he takes towards some of this stuff?
First of all, the full interview, like, if you watch the full thing, it actually wasn't that bad. You know, it wasn't, because, like, I think the thing that kind of came out after was that, like, Kyle was kind of saying that, you know, he hasn't talked to Kawhi. Mm. And that's not what he was saying. He was basically refusing to tell us whether or not he had. Which is totally just a Kyle move, like a harmless thing that you could just do, but you just won't do because, like, you want to antagonize the media, essentially. Just like, it just got out of something he does, and, you know, he often does not have much of a reason for it. He does it in good times and bad. The only time he hasn't really done it is when he's been up for a contract extension, so that's just kind of how it is with Kyle. He doesn't like answering questions in front of a scrum. He avoids it like the plague during the regular season. That's kind of why we saw Fred VanVleet talking so much more at the end of the season. It's kind of like as soon as he kind of came on as a vocal leader, he just kind of took that mantle and became kind of a symbiotic thing where Fred didn't mind doing it and the media liked talking to Fred because Fred actually, you know, elaborates and answers questions and like has no problem being that guy. So, you know, it's like, If you've been around Kyle and understand that that's kind of just a tack that he takes, and there's really no rhyme or reason for it at all, and it's just like that's just kind of what he does. The only time we ever get an answer out of him from anything is usually like on Twitter when Woj like probably texts him and is like, "Hey, how do you feel about this?" and Kyle responds to him, or maybe it's Kyle's representation responding to him. Who knows? But like that's the only time we ever get a gauge into what Kyle Lowry is really ever feeling. It's probably the most reliable gauge, and at least in the public sphere. So, you know, it's not the most encouraging thing. That all that said, like I think with a season like this and with the spotlight that they're gonna have, I think maybe Kyle will come to realize that his behaving that way is going to blow up on a much larger scale than it used to. And maybe that will encourage him to tone it down, just because I'm sure that, you know, I don't know how much that stuff actually played into what he's actually feeling, but I can also assume that he just doesn't want to deal with that level of annoyance and attention that he got from it. And I also think he understands from his career, the impact that having a reputation as a guy that isn't the most affable can have negatively on your career and your earnings and the way that people in the league perceive you. I think he might just tone it down as the spotlight gets bigger and like these things actually have consequences, as opposed to right now where like the media environment with the Raptors has been quite insulated for a long time. It's obviously very Canadian, like, it's Canadian people who are paying attention. Most of the people that are in that locker room, like, obviously I was new last year, but most people who are in that locker room have been there for a while. They understand the ropes, how it works, who to talk to, when to talk to them, and, like, they also just understand, like, that you're not really going to get a straight-up answer out of Kyle Lowry for most things ever. Mm-hmm. So it'll be kind of interesting to see how that translates on a national stage and to see whether he reacts to it or not.
Yeah, for sure, because I feel like there is that kind of like void that if you want to like create drama, that like, yes, Kyle Lowry will sort of help facilitate that by being vague and playing these games. But if you do know the context, like as you mentioned, like this is kind of within his regular repertoire. I think going back to the win total thing, I think the ESPN thing, like obviously, you know, it's sort of been this like meme that's, I don't know if it's a meme or if it's serious. I mean, if it really is serious, it's actually really funny that people would be so upset over it. But, like, you know, the Raptors have sort of consistently been shorted these wins, and they sort of consistently outproduce those games. But I think it really does tie back to DeMar and sort of the way, like, the fact that DeMar would consistently get rated under guys like Jay Crowder and Marcus Smart. It's sort of the same thing of, like, well, if you take that, if you don't rate DeMar as, like, a really good player, then you probably don't think the Raptors are going to be a really good team. And so those things went hand in hand. All of a sudden, you take DeMar off the team, and all of a sudden, the Raptors have this great win total. Also, getting Kawhi doesn't hurt whatsoever. Right. I think it was a little bit interesting that Vegas also put out their over-under odds, and they put Toronto at 54.5, right? So it's pretty much the same thing, 55.1, 54.5. The big difference here is that Boston was at, let me see here, 57.5 as compared to 53. So it's kind of a question of, like, do you think Boston is better than Toronto? And if so, like, what makes them better than the Raptors?
Yes, they have more star power. They have
They have so many good scores. It's nuts, man.
They have the best defense in the NBA. They have the best coach in the NBA. At least a top three coach in the NBA. Hmm. They have a top five scorer in the league. They have an incredible defensive anchor. They have one of the best swingmen in the league, not as good as Kawhi Leonard, and also coming off an injury too.
Hmm.
They have incredible depth. They have players coming off of seasons where they're kind of bound to improve. I'm really excited to see what Jason Tatum looks like next year, as well as Jaylen Brown. They're coming off a great playoff run that I think gave them a better sense of identity and purpose, and a better framework for all of really every player on that team from top to bottom knows their role. They're bringing back Marcus Smart. They're very deep. Do I have to go on? They are very, very good.
Yeah.
I mean, they won 55 games last year with Hayward out for the entire season. And
Kyrie played like 50 something games.
Yeah, I mean, I think we shouldn't act like they're going to play 82 games. Those are Kyrie Irving. There's a guy that has been injury prone for his entire career, really. I think we should price in at least 15 games missed per season for Kyrie Irving. And Hayward is going to be coming off of a serious injury, but I do think that these questions about Hayward and what he's going to come back like they're amplified by the gruesome nature of the injury and the fact that we all witnessed it live on TV. And mm-hmm. it was just this very big thing. At the end of the day, it's a break, and a break is much better than a tear. And I think, you know, we've seen time and time again, guys come off fine after breaks, especially guys that are younger. And I mean, it seems like, you know, I don't want to be like muscle watch, but he was pretty good in his workout videos over the off season.
Shout out Drew Hanlon. This guy is making himself a lot of money really this summer, man. I mean, like every Drew single Hanlon guy, it's Drew
won
Hanlon.
The off season, especially if Markel Fultz is a jumper next year, man. Drew Hanlon is gonna be a millionaire soon. I mean, if he isn't already, like it's a big year. It's a big year for Drew Hanlon.
Yeah, for sure. The thing actually with Boston that scares me the most, I think actually like defensively they might take a little bit of a step back just because like you add another year to Horford and like their front court depth isn't great. Like they're relying a lot on like Tice and even Baines to some degree. And I guess I don't know. I'm just envisioning if you put Horford in foul trouble, then they are in some sort of issues there because they don't have a lot of front court depth. But I mean, like, ultimately, Al Horford is not a defensive liability whatsoever. The thing that scares me the most about Boston is just like the young guys and how much of a leap they'll take. Like, we saw Jaylen Brown year one versus Jaylen Brown year two. It's like night and day. Like, mm-hmm. he took like a bigger jump than even someone like Pascal. And
year three is usually the year.
And then also like Jason Tatum, like, man, shout out Drew Hanlon apparently, but like these videos of him just like making these Kobe moves and
mm-hmm.
I mean, we saw in the playoffs, I mean, he did at the highest level in the playoffs. He dunked on LeBron in mm-hmm. game seven of the fourth quarter of a game seven.
And the guy looks like young Kevin Durant.
He does. He really does. It was fun when everyone was calling him Jeff Green 3.0. It was fun when people were saying, wow, the Celtics drafted Tobias Harris with the third pick. And all of a sudden, it's not so funny when they have.
No, it's really not anymore.
Yeah.
You know, when we start having these debates over whether Gordon Hayward or Jason Tatum is the better player, I'm actually really interested in seeing what their starting lineup is actually going to look like next season. Because they can go a lot of different directions with it.
Do you think they'll start small? And just, like, put Horford at the five and then three wings and Kyrie?
I don't know. Like, I think, obviously, that's a line that you close with.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, like, we don't really need to go into because, but really they can all shoot and defend and they're incredibly long and they're mismatch problems and they're switchable and they're athletic and, my God, this team is going to be hard to play in the playoffs. But, you know, it's at the same time, the regular season, maybe you just don't put that wear and tear on guys. And if you are re-signing Baines, you might as well just throw him into the starting lineup for the sake of random regular season games when you kind of know what you are. That's kind of the scariest thing about the Celtics. Like, they're a young team that knows what they are. So they can spend a great deal of the regular season just doing whatever. They can be rested. They can try different things. They can do developmental things, try a whole bunch of different lineups. They can lose more games than they're supposed to, and it won't really matter because they've just built such a strong identity there. That's really, like, That's kind of the esoteric thing that scares me mm-hmm. the most. because when you combine that with all this young potential and like also not even potential, like we've got guys on this team that are really, really like they are the real deal. So it's just kind of, I don't know, it's really scary. There's just not a lot of like, what can you point out that's like, I would love to hear the case against Boston, but I really have hard times. I have a hard time thinking about the negatives. I think the case that you're making as far as their defense goes is definitely true, especially for a team that's gonna be coming off of like for a guy that's gonna be coming off an injury like Hayward. He's gonna be back in the starting lineup. He's gonna be a little bit slower for at least a little while. And Kyrie had like a nice defensive month when he first joined the Celtics. But I mean, he's not. You know, he's an average defender, I guess. You know, he's not like a strong defensive player. Definitely not like to the level of love that he was getting at the start of the season last year. He's kind of somewhere in between what I think his perception is. But he's definitely not like, you know, a Terry or a Marcus Smart.
Yeah, which again, I mean, if you need to bring in guys to match up, those are not bad options to bring off the bench. Yeah, I like, there is no good argument against Boston, right? Like, even last year, like, they had those two major injuries and, you know, still went to the Eastern Conference Finals, 55 games and whatever. The front court thing, I think defensively, yeah, they might take a little bit of a step back. But, I mean, we've also seen, like,
maybe Jaylen Brown just decides to become Draymond Green next year, right? Sorry to cut you
exactly,
off.
Yeah, like, exactly. That's the thing with young guys. Like, right? You just don't know. And they have, like, crazy upside. Like, the amount of upside the Celtics have is kind of crazy. And, like, I think the Raptors, like, if you just want to compare the two teams, defensively, there's a good case we made. The Raptors might have a better defense than the Celtics. We still got to see. I have no idea what Nick Nurse is as a defensive coach. Mm-hmm. Anytime you hear compliments about Nick Nurse, it's always about on offense. So we got to see that first. But, I mean, if you put it all together, of course, like, they could have the best defense in the league. It really is very nice. But then
I just don't think that you can start JV and have a better defense than the Celtics do.
That's
it's
true.
I just don't think it's possible. And that's, like, that's with all, like, deference to how much JV has, like, managed to improve himself defensively. He's just in space. You know, against certain matchups, he's just such a liability. That said, in the specific matchup with the Celtics, JV is one of the few guys in the league that can really, really give Al Horford headaches.
So I was going to say,
that'll be really interesting to see.
The Raptors have kind of consistently played the Celtics pretty well.
Yeah.
They've given them trouble over the years. I mean, look, they've been I mean, I guess they've been equivalent in teams over the years, so I guess that makes sense, right? But you know, we've seen the Raptors shut them down in the past. But, I mean, in a playoff setting, I think the Raptors, obviously the Celtics will have an upgrade over or an advantage over the Raptors. But at least defensively, like 1 through 4, I think I'm more confident in the Raptors' defensive personnel than the Celtics' personnel. But then when you come down to it, like, who can create a shot in Boston? It's like Kyrie, obviously, is like one of the greatest shot makers and creators in the NBA, if not one of I don't know if he's the greatest, but I mean, he's obviously very good. Gordon Hayward can get his own shot. Who knows what he looks like when he comes back, but I'm reasonably confident he can create his own shot.
By the end of the season, for sure.
Yeah. And then, like, Jason Tatum, he could also really create his own shot. So, like, you compare that to the Raptors, like, Kawhi Leonard can create his own shot for sure. Mm-hmm. And then it's like Kyle Lowry can kind of do it, kind of. But realistically, his best option is to play off the ball and like randomly sneak up for a three or like take a random pull-up transition three. But he's not a consistent scorer where he can like carry your offense for 5 minutes. It just doesn't really happen. He's opportunistic. And so and you compare like three shot creators versus one, it's, you know...
Yeah, it's kind of interesting in that it's kind of become an inverse of Raptors versus Cavs, where the Raptors are now the team that has, probably the undisputed best player on the court, the best player in the Eastern Conference, which is why they, you know, despite everything we might say about Boston, at the end of the day, like, I have so much faith in the idea that if you have the best player on the court, like, you just have the edge.
Mm-hmm.
And against the Celtics, that might not be true, but you have enough going for you that it's a real matchup. Like, it's kind of like, I would look at it like 60-40 for, and like, the 60 going to the Celtics. Yeah. Maybe even 65-35. But, you know, it's a real honest-to-God shot. And it's just kind of interesting how the tables have turned in that regard. Like, it used to be the Raptors with all these guys going up against LeBron James and a bunch of spare parts. And, you know, the Raptors guys are definitely better than spare parts, but it's just the role reversal in the course of really just like a couple of months and things and pieces moving around are just a testament to the fact that, you know, the NBA is really, really going to be interesting next year. We're going to have a season where almost nothing could be the same as a season before.
Yeah. Okay, and then the last thing just completely zoned out there. The last thing I want to talk about before we go to break and take some Twitter questions actually two of your pieces, really. I think the interview that you did with Mahmoud Abdul-Arouf at Big 3 was really good. I think everyone should just go read it. And also, at SB Nation, by the way. And also, the other piece that you put out, which is, I guess, closer to the Raptors, was about Masai Ujiri and his efforts to grow the infrastructure and the game of basketball in Africa. Mm-hmm. Like, just take us through, like, sort of the process of, like, how you spoke to him, like, sort of how enthusiastic he was to sort of share that vision. And also, like, that story he told about it, just the fact that, you know, he was one of those kids. He sees himself in these, mm-hmm. in these kids, and how much he feels like a personal responsibility to give back. Because I know a lot of people have been calling Masai a snake, and look, it's a snake type of business, but the Masai as a human being, I don't think really can be questioned in terms of his character.
Yeah, no question. I mean, Masai as, like, the off-court figure, I think, kind of, like, highlighted it for himself pretty well. And when I was doing some reading before I was talking to him, and there was a 2016 article with Bruce Arthur where, you know, he pretty much straight up said that basketball was always going to be secondary to him in comparison to giving back to Africa, to Nigeria, where he was born, to giving kids who grew up like him, not necessarily completely like him. He, you know, in the grand scheme of things, grew up fairly middle class in Africa and had more opportunities than maybe some of his peers, but just generally growing up in a place where you just don't have much upward mobility, much hope of really bettering yourself in a serious way, and being able to have an impact in the world and on your community the way that Masai has. And, you know, he's just somebody who I think, because I didn't have too long of a conversation with Masai, to be honest. You know, it was a phone conversation, and I tried to hit on as many things as I could, but Masai just has always struck me as a guy who has a very, very deep understanding of how different things could have been with him. And I think he has an acute awareness of the version of his life where things didn't break his way, where, you know, people weren't willing to let him sleep on a couch and weren't willing to vouch for him. And that version of his life is not the same thing as these things that he's accomplished now, where he's a high-level NBA executive. He helped open a court with or community center with Barack Obama's sister, and mm-hmm. you know, has been able to do all these amazing things. Has met Nelson Mandela. Has, you know, been like, you know, the best GM in Raptors history. And you know, I think he understands the marginality of that possibility and how unlikely it all was for him. And when you see all the things that he's done, I think he gets the fact that somebody that among those kids in those camps, there are people with that level of potential, and he wants to help as many of them as possible to achieve that, because that's the type of thing that he needed when he was young. And whether that's a matter of hope or opportunity or getting a break, something that he mentioned was, you know, when he was playing, his coach brought Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Oscar Robertson to Nigeria, and he got to meet them in a similar camp-like setting, definitely on a smaller scale, but mm-hmm. kind of like still getting to interact with a guy in the NBA who he'd heard of and, like, you know, could really have this actual ability to represent a possibility what he could be, right. which is kind of the toughest thing, right? Like, the thing that I always subscribe to is that role models are local, at least for most people. You know, mm-hmm. you don't idolize the professional athlete that you never see on a screen. That you only see on a screen.
Right.
You idolize the person that you have more run-ins with, or the person that's a local figure, and whatever heights that person achieves is probably where you max out your own potential in your own mind. At least for most people, there's obviously always going to be people that are exceptional in that regard and are just able to envision themselves in scenarios. But for the most part, we're not really like that as people. So, you know, I think he understands that, and I think to an extent he lived that. So he kind of, you know, he knows what is possible for people if you just open a couple more doors.
Yeah, and, for sure.
That's just like, that's kind of just become his goal.
Yeah, and I think what's really rare is that, like, I think it's just in the NBA, you just have to be a little bit skeptical of everybody, because I think, like, everyone's kind of like trying to, if they do stuff off the court, it's always like some kind of salesmanship to it, especially if you're the GM where your job is salesmanship. But, like, I think with Masai, it's just like it's very genuine. When you see him, like, talk about these things, it's like he has a genuine passion for doing this. He really does feel like he obviously has, like, a sort of a greater calling that he has to sort of aspire to. And mm-hmm. whenever he's spoken about basketball, he really does put it secondary. Like, it's not about, like, him not caring about his job. It's just, like, he kind of knows, like, what mm-hmm. He sees the bigger picture, and he really does act upon it. And, like, it's great that every single summer he devotes this time to, you know, expanding. It's not about, like, him trying to vie for a position here or a job here or this and that. It's, like, no ulterior motive beyond just, like, you know, giving mm-hmm. opportunity. And, like, that's really, really cool. You got to really respect that.
Right, absolutely. And I think, like, one of the things that we were privately talking about at work was just, you know, is there a level of opportunism here where, you know, Masai hasn't had the best summer from a PR perspective, at least in terms of, like, just, you know, like you said, people are kind of are calling his character into question. Mm. But at the same time, I mean, this is...
He does this, you know, this is his 16th straight summer.
He's had this foundation for a very long time.
Right.
This has been important to him for way longer than he's been a Raptors GM, way longer than he had designs on training tomorrow. And talking about this stuff, doing these interviews, is definitely something that he has been doing for much longer than the moment in time right now where he could have used a nice story about himself, right? Like, this is mm-hmm. kind of just who he is.
Yeah. All right. On that note, we're going to take a quick break, and then on the other side, we will take some Twitter questions.
I'm Brian Goldfinger of Goldfinger Injury Lawyers. Is your insurance company forcing you to go back to work when your doctors say you can't? If this sounds familiar, look no further than my law firm. Visit goldfingerlaw.com and get us working for you.
Welcome back to the second half of the show. We're taking your Twitter questions. As always, hit us up at Raptors Republic. First question comes from Assad. Is Kawhi more West End district or East End? See, you're new to Toronto.
Yeah, like, yeah, I'm going to defer this one to you.
Have you encountered this East versus West bias? Actually, Wait, which side are you living on, East or West? Don't reveal your location, but just...
I am right in the middle.
That's
like, I don't know what the actually, like, I don't even understand, like, the demarcation. Like,
it's Young.
Okay, I'm West.
You're West? Yes.
Just west of Young. Like,
yeah.
I'm literally a block away from Young Street.
That's fine. It's fine. Yeah. West End.
Okay.
Is Kawhi more West End or East End? I mean, I'm gonna keep it real. I mean, like, obviously, I would like to claim Kawhi for West End, but he's more of an East End guy. He's keeps to himself. He's more reserved. Sticks with his people. West End is always more aspirational and, you know, wants bigger lights, bigger cities, stuff like that. Whereas East End, you know, is just happy being East End. Yeah, okay, next one from Raps 12 wins left. Wow, already counting. Is Ibaka going to come off the bench? Will this make him a greater factor with reduced minutes come playoff time? So, There's some talk that maybe Ibaka comes off the bench as the backup center. Nick Nurse kind of talked about how he sees his rosters having six starters. And, you know, he's talked to Ibaka about potentially coming off the bench, and Ibaka was apparently open to the idea. Now, everyone's open to the idea until they actually do it, and Ibaka's a pretty accomplished guy, and he started his whole career. But I don't know. What do you think about Ibaka coming off the bench as presumably the backup five?
Yeah, I'm not sure it makes a lot of sense, to be honest, because of the way that the roster is configured and what the starting lineup is going to look like. There's just like a... Like, who do you... It kind of depends. Like, do you start OG Anunoby then instead and just go, like, with wings at the four? Because I think there's definitely merit to doing that, especially based on matchups in the playoffs. But at the same time, like, why do you want OG or Danny or Kawhi wearing themselves down at the four for the regular season? At least, you know, when there's not much of a reason to, as opposed to just having... Surge start, you're already kind of going into the season where you're ruffling a lot of feathers, right? Like, if you're gonna do that, maybe do it a little bit later. I think if there's anybody you take off the bench, it's probably JV, even though, you know, he adds so much. It's just one of those things where I think, because, like, if you want to develop a defensive identity with the starting lineup,
you play
Surge as five. That said, do you want to play Surge as five all season? Because, like, it's kind of the same reasoning with OG or any of the wings at four. Like, you don't really want to wear him down like that. I guess as an alternative, you can just not start him to keep him fresh. But at the same time, you know, you can kind of just only play him 20 minutes a game, especially if you just go to the OG matchup later, like, try a bunch of different things. There's no dearth of different wing things they could try out. So I don't think Surge is going to play a lot of regular season minutes anyways. Like, it's just not really a big concern to me. I just don't think it's that big of an issue, at least not an issue where you necessarily have to take him off the bench. That said, if he comes into the season like as bad as he was in the playoffs and just like a total zero on both ends, I think you obviously have to consider it, just because, like, you need productivity from anybody in your starting lineup. But at the same time, I want to give him a chance to not look like that guy. I think obviously, like, nobody looked good in the playoffs. It was like kind of everybody's worst face. So, you know, I don't really want to make full-on judgments on the base of that. I think he also had the hardest time transitioning to the new offense out of any of the major rotation players. He's just a guy that has tunnel vision. He doesn't see that extra pass. Like, we've seen him so many times this season hesitate, like, in that wing. Like, do I make the swing or do I make the shot or do I drive? And, like, in that hesitation time, like, the defense is rotated and you've lost something because he couldn't really figure that out. And that's something that he could figure out this season. It's something that maybe Nurse could potentially help him out with, or at least try not to move him along his own timeline as fast as he does with everybody else. Maybe that's the thing. Like, maybe that type of stuff is a reason why Nick isn't... Maybe Nick wouldn't really want to start him because he doesn't really fit with that sort of program. I think if there's any sort of thing we're able to glean about what Nick likes offensively, it's not necessarily just about the threes. It's kind of just like having that quick trigger decision making where everything's happening fast, fast, fast. Like, I remember even, like, when I would watch folks on the bench last year, like, even like when Fred did stuff, like, Nick would kind of just like shake his head and be like, oh, like, even if it ended up being the right play, it just kind of like, he has a very, very prescribed strong vision for what an offense could look like, and like, that good move is still like, he wants the great move, and like, Surge is kind of tapped out with good moves, you know, like, he just doesn't,
yeah, he peaks with good
has, yeah, exactly, like, I don't know if the extra gear is really there for him, whereas I think with a guy like even in Siakam, definitely OG, like, we don't really, like, he could, I'm so excited for OG next year. I think that's an underrated storyline. We're forgetting that you know, he is coming off reps. He is coming into the season not coming off a torn ACL. He's going to have a full off season to actually train that he didn't have last year. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be really interesting. So he can really, really be molded. He's definitely like a modern. He has the makings of a modern player. Danny, Kawhi, Kyle, obviously. Siakam is somebody who I think Nick must be really, really excited to kind of work with in that regard too. And like, Serge just doesn't represent any of that stuff. So that could be the thing at play there, which you know, if that's the vision, I like, you know, then that's the vision. And I'm going to like kind of let it play out.
Yeah. Look, I think you make a lot of good points with the search thing. I don't think it's necessarily as big of a problem as you mentioned, but I think the bigger picture is like the Raptors just have like so many wings that if you don't establish Ibaka as a center quickly enough, then mm-hmm. you're just not going to find enough minutes between the 2, 3, 4 spots to get everyone touches. And maybe that speaks to the construction of the roster, right? Like the Raptors right now have a ton of 2s and 3s and enough centers, but just like not a lot of power forwards, and sort of they're mm-hmm. kind of making do right now, and Serge is kind of a make do power forward even though he's supposed to be a long-term solution. I think from that perspective, then, like, you probably just want to put him there. Because, like, let's say you put Serge at, four, then, I mean, like, okay, one of, I think you put, like, what, Danny Green comes off the bench then?
I don't know. Maybe even OG comes off the bench.
Yeah, which is just weird. Like, I don't really quite see the need for that. Like, I think on paper, if I was just playing like 2K and like I had full control and everyone was still happy or whatever, like yeah, I would put Serge off the bench. I would put JV as a 5 and put wings around mm-hmm. them. But like over the course of regular season, I think you can mix and match. I just think that like early on, they really do have to establish with Serge that like, look, we're gonna move you around, right? And you're gonna start some nights. You're not gonna start other nights. So we're gonna try a lot of things. It's nothing against you personally, although we don't think you're a consistent day in day out starter. Which let's be real, you're not. And see sort of how he takes it. I think it will be a little bit difficult to sell him on that just because it is a new coach and there's not mm-hmm. As much cachet from a guy like that to sell the move. But also at the same time, like Serge has kind of also been a pretty good soldier throughout. And like when he was benched in the playoffs, he didn't really say anything. Of course, he had like more turnovers than like actual field goals for like a solid mm-hmm. 5 games. So, you know, it is what it is. But you know, he's been a good soldier, and I think you try to approach it.
There's nothing in his career to indicate that he would be malcontent.
And he's got the money now, so it's not going to affect his money at all.
Yeah, and he's out of his prime as well. Like he's kind of had his heyday as like defensive player of the year, as like the third guy on those Oklahoma City teams. Obviously, I'm sure he'd like to add a title to that belt as well. So I think if you sell it to him from that perspective, which is kind of like what I said earlier, like we're going to have these little issues like this, like there probably will be a little bit of unrest with things moving around, but at the same time, like you have to assume everybody on this team is very hungry to add that to their belt and to go to the next level. And that, if that can be a unifying force for them, then these things will hopefully just kind of smooth themselves over.
Mm. There's a lot of questions about Greg Monroe, which we've already touched on. Look, there's like a 5-minute limit to any Greg Monroe talk. People are getting a little bit too excited over this. Someone asked, so the Hoop Wire asks, does Danny Green play a role in the rotation? That I think that's crazy. Like Danny Green is a rotation player.
Danny Green is starting the playoffs. He is very good. He is like a 3-and-D swingman with title experience.
Maybe he meant what role does Danny Green play in the rotation? Because I think that's probably a little bit more interesting. Like, do you think he plays more than 25 minutes per game, for example? Just because there's such a glut of wings.
Probably right in that range. Because there are so many wings. I think he's on most nights and like crunch time nights, he's a closer because he's a two-way guy. And he will probably provide stability. I think he's also going to be... given everything that's going to... all the moving parts, it will behoove the Raptors to make sure that Danny Green has an important role so that he can be an important locker room voice.
True.
Because that's kind of something he's been able to do in the past. He's very vocal. He's kind of like a consensus figure, at least from what I glean. And like, I haven't been in the Spurs locker room, but like in and around like all the things that you hear about Danny Green. I think because, you know, taking him in or out, unless he's really, really bad for some reason, you might as well just make sure that he has a strong identity on the team so that he can have weight in the locker room. Because that's going to be kind of an interesting thing to look at, especially with DeMar gone. And Kyle is not that guy. He was tried to build himself into that guy. He's not very local. He's more of a lead by example type of guy. He's, you know, I think his teammates like him a lot, but he's not this guy that really speaks out. Fred was sort of starting to become that person, so you know, it would be important for him to have a good season so he can also continue to have that cachet. He's definitely more of a natural leader. I think Danny kind of has that charisma and ability too from what I've heard. So just based on that, like, I think it would just be smart if the Raptors were like, hey, yeah, we're just going to start Danny Green. And he's going to be that guy.
Yeah, and it doesn't really hurt. I mean, he's like everything you would ask for from a complimentary guy. I don't think he's like as consistent of a shooter as he was in the past. Like, he was like, you know, every year like 40-some%. I think nowadays, like last year, he was a little bit more inconsistent, and you know, his role kind of fluctuated a little bit. But like on a team like the Raptors, yeah, I completely agree. Like, he's gonna get minutes for sure. Okay, all right. Next one from Mark is a math teacher now. Congrats. Christmas game against the Celtics or against the Spurs? First off, do the Raptors actually get a Christmas game this year? And is it kind of sad that the Raptors fans are so hung up over something like this? Personally, I like not having Christmas to myself.
Yeah. Seriously, I mean, it's really one of the funny things where like every media member is like, I don't know. Do the Raptors really need a Christmas game? I don't know, because I kind of like seeing my family during Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they should have a Christmas game this year. I think, you know, they're the one seed coming off making a huge blockbuster trade. They're the second best team in the East, at the very least. And, you know, they are due. They made a big uproar about it last year. They're going to be a big storyline. They made the biggest move of the offseason, other than obviously LeBron signing with the Lakers. But as far as transaction move goes, like, that's... they got the guy that was on the trade block. There's very, very little reason for them not to have a Christmas game. And I really, really hope that it's on the road.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, look, it would be it's gonna be a lot of hate for Kawhi. I think there's like the image of like Spurs fans is like, they're just so classy, just like the organization, you know, they treat everyone with respect. Like, no.
But here's the thing, I don't think the NBA can afford to give a Christmas slot to the Spurs.
Wow, that's right, they have no real stars.
Yeah, like, what are you gonna do? Like, they're not, like, they're like a fringe playoff team that, like, you know, they're gonna be like 7 or 6 seed, and you can't really... I mean, listen, DeMar DeRozan teams don't give Christmas games.
That's right. People just don't tune in to see DeMar DeRozan pump fake his way into a foul. It's just
true. I mean, we know this. We've experienced this. This is the reason these fans have a chip on their shoulders, because DeMar DeRozan does not get that type of play in this league. He just doesn't. He's not that player. So, I mean, I don't think the Spurs are getting a Christmas game. This is something I'm really curious about. Like, I just don't know who it's going to be. I think Toronto versus LA would be a really interesting Christmas game. Because
the Kawhi angle? Here's the thing, the Kawhi thing is just going to give the Raptors relevance all year.
Freak out sort of thing. Like, it's kind of, there's a lot of different factors at play. And it's also like, it's not like the Lakers versus Golden State is like the matchup that you pencil in. Like, I think out of deference to the Rockets, you probably want to make that like the Western Conference matchup. And then Philly versus Celtics just has so much juice that you probably want to make that one the Christmas matchup on the Eastern Conference side as well. It's kind of weird because, like, usually this, like, the interconference thing is like saved for things that could potentially be matchups, but it's also occasionally saved for that like runner-up matchup thing, you know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. I don't know if that makes sense, but like that, like the it's almost like if the NBA had like a tournament consolation bracket for the teams that get knocked out early, like that would, like, Lakers versus Raptors is like a potential matchup, and sometimes they have Christmas matchups that are like that thing.
Yeah. Look, I don't see why not. I think obviously the Knicks are gonna get a Christmas game. The Sixers and the Celtics are gonna get one. So like, you need one more from the East, right? Just make it the Raptors. Come on, man. This is just, look, honestly, if it's just for nothing else for Raptors fans to like stop complaining about it, just do it for that. Just do it for that reason alone.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man. There's so many Greg Monroe questions. This is wild. There's so many Greg Monroe questions.
Defer everybody to the first 5 minutes of the podcast. Unless there's actually like, is there something we didn't touch on?
No, I this is the thing. People just keep asking about, like, okay, the Raptors center rotation. We talked about that with the surge thing. So, forget it. All right. This one from Marcos. What are the odds of DeMar DeRozan making the All-Star team as a starter, reserve, or neither?
DeMar's made his last All-Star game.
Bold.
Why? It's like, look at the West.
Prove him.
I mean, we should change prove, like, it'll be like the funniest thing. We change prove him to like prove with the U instead of the E with the second word. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. I don't know how Raptors fans are gonna feel about that one, but I mean, listen. It's kind of like there's gonna be this emotional thing for a while, but after a while, I think, you know, it's kind of like the Raptors broke up with that boyfriend where like you show him in pictures and then you're like, he looks better in real life, and you're kind of like, you just don't have to do that anymore, you know? And I think
yeah. Wow, that's shockingly accurate. Yeah, I mean, honestly, I really do kind of feel that kind of relief a little bit. But also, like, it's also kind of weird, though. Like, because, like, the Raptors, like, broke up with DeMar, right? So, like, it's kind of weird to constantly, like, look at your ex and then be like, well, you know, this and this. And then, like, I mean, it's hypocritical for me to put it down to say this. But, like, you know, like, to, like, at this point, to put DeMar down is kind of just, like, he's not even on the team anymore. So, we don't really have to go there for that.
That being said, that, you know, jokes are jokes, so. Probably gonna make the All-Star game over him.
Yeah,
that's, you know, it's just there's. What are you gonna do?
Like, I'd rather see Donovan Mitchell in there anyway. I'm not gonna lie. Like,
what?
I'd rather see Donovan Mitchell in an All-Star game.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, like, what are you gonna do? Like, there's James Harden, Paul George, Kevin Durant,
Westbrook.
Yeah,
Dame. Yeah, this is the thing. Like, there's just too many. Like, okay, look,
Jimmy Butler.
Like, I'm just going through like the guard / forwards that made the Western All Stars last year. Steph, James Harden, Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, Damian Lillard, Klay Thompson, Jimmy Butler, Paul George, and Paul George was like a replacement guy. Like,
yeah, is, like when Paul not, George becomes a replacement guy, like there's just not much that you can do about it. And like who's the bubble guy last year? Devin Booker. Devin Booker's probably gonna be a year better and. You know, the Suns aren't going to be good, but they're better than last year. And, like, that, like, he still probably won't make it because it's that stacked.
Yeah. And that's the thing.
Oh, by the way, LeBron James.
Oh, yeah, and LeBron's going there.
Conference. It's not Paul George is, like, you know, even with injuries, like, not making. Yeah, it's just, yeah, I don't know. Unless DeMar ends up back in the West or. You know, I don't want to say maybe not for the rest of his career because, like, you never really know what is going to happen in the NBA. Like, true. There could just be a whole shift and maybe one day the West isn't as stacked, but or DeMar goes back to the East. But as of right now, I just don't see the avenue for it to happen. Like, so many things would have to break right. And then, like, you'd also have to, like, you know, that like, you'd have to have only forwards getting hurt.
Mm.
You know, like, that would be the only way to make it happen. Like, if Paul George is, like, the guy getting in and he gets hurt, while Jimmy Butler is also hurt, and then, you know, probably, like, figure in another injury just for good measure, then maybe he kind of sneaks in. Like, Mike Conley is a guy who in the East would have made a whole bunch of All-Star teams.
Yeah,
and,
for
like,
sure.
Is just, you know, gonna end up...
He's never gonna make one. No, it's over for him. Yeah.
Yeah, like, he's just not. And he is... an awesome player and would have like been way more well regarded if he played in the East. Like, that's just kind of the advantage that you get when you play in the Eastern Conference.
Mm. I think that was also a little bit deep down, like, part of the reason why DeMar was so upset. It's just like that opportunity to be DeMar DeRozan kind of like ended in Toronto. Like,
yeah, it's true. It's true.
Right. Which, you know, it sucks, but it is what it is. Okay. Last one from P. Kelly. Make a prediction. Is Kyle Lowry an All-Star this year?
Ooh, this is interesting.
Or is anyone other than on the Raptors an All-Star other than Kawhi?
Okay, like, do you want to just do this quickly in our heads? Like, figure out who are the guards and like, kind of go from there?
Okay, sure. Like, for the East,
I think,
right?
Kyle could probably like, kind of bubble himself in.
Yeah, I think I think he should. Even last year, he wasn't even that impressive for the first half of the year, and he still made it.
Yeah, and he kind of just like figured it out. He made it. He was probably like one of the last selections on the team.
Probably.
But probably still, like, I think it was a fair pick for him to be on there.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, I mean, if the Raptors are a 2 seed, it's going to be kind of hard to not have them have 2 All-Stars.
Look, I'm just going to say, Goran Dragic was on this team last year.
Yeah, like, I don't know. They're probably going to make it. Probably going to make it.
He's going to make it. It's not a question of, like, there's some, like, underwhelming murmur that JV might make the All-Star game, which, like, you guys are drinking the Kool-Aid a little bit too much. a little bit too much. But then again, I mean, also Drummond made the team last year. Horford's a better player for sure, but it's not exactly a flashy player.
He's like not the type. He's the type of guy who would make my All-Star team, but like right. also like it's surprising to me that he makes like the conventional All-Star team.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really quite see JV making that leap, but also like there's a lot of possessions freed up now that DeRozan's not here, and like
Kawhi's Nick is just gonna be force feeding him, turning him into like his little project. So if that goes well too, I don't know that also. Maybe like we'll see what JV worked on this offseason.
True,
he came back much better this season. So there's that as well.
Yeah, look, if JV can defend, like just continue to take improvements. Take steps towards like his just improving his defense. Like, you know, he can become if he just kind of like play 30 minutes a game, his numbers will look good enough. It'd probably be like 18 and 11, 18 and 12 maybe with like a block. And you're like, wow, that guy's on one of the top two teams in the East. Why not give him an All-Star appearance?
Yeah, that's true. Maybe he gets in over Kyle. Like that would be kind of
That would be weird. But also, I think Kyle Lowry would appreciate that. I think he just wants to go golfing and stuff.
Oh my god, I think Kyle would love to not make the All-Star team.
Yeah,
well, it's so funny. That's like such an interesting difference between him and DeMar is like the best friends duo. It was actually so funny because on the court and like their personas are so incredibly different.
Yeah, maybe they, you know what? Maybe they adapted their games to each other. You know,
maybe. Or, it gives me some hope for the Kawhi-Kyle partnership. Like, as long as somebody's, like, you kind of need that one person to filter and, like, be willing to introduce them to each other while they, like, look at each other from across the room and, like, just kind of, like, stare at the floor. Mm. But if you kind of make that transition, I think they'd get along pretty well.
Yeah. Okay. Sirit, thank you so much for making this great appearance on the podcast. Where can people find you and your work?
Officially, finally, just at SB Nation, which is great. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, seriously, it's definitely check out Sirit on SB Nation. The last every single piece that you write is pure fire. That's not conjecture. That's
I appreciate that.
That's pure facts right there. So, also on Twitter.
Yeah, Damian Triller on Twitter. There not long for the world.
Honestly, are you even that big of a fan of Damian Lillard?
I'm not. I've like never really cheered for him that much. I just kind of like the name and. Yeah. Mm. I don't know. I was young.
Yeah. We were all young ones. Okay. All right. That does it for the podcast. We'll be back next week to talk more about Greg Monroe.